Welcome to episode 29 of the SWNZ podcast, the podcast for New Zealand Star Wars fans. My name is Matt.
And my name is Christy.
We spent some time at the Armageddon in Tauranga over the past weekend, so we're going to circle around and talk about that in reasonable detail very shortly. Let's start the podcast with a bit of a news roundup. There's a couple of things that came to our attention over the last day or so that are kind of interesting and worth sharing. First thing to note is that Temuera Morrison is back in New Zealand, having wrapped up his filming. We talked about the filming for The Book of Boba Fett having wrapped recently. We know he's back in New Zealand because he released on Instagram, or at least the Polynesian Spa in Rotorua released on Instagram a video of him basically promoting that tourist venue. And it's particularly relevant. It's not just Tim being Tim. It's particularly relevant because he did speak in that video clip on the Polynesian Spa Instagram page about the duration of time that he was filming The Book of Boba Fett, which was 7 months. That's quite a long stretch for a short season like this. That's a good 3+ weeks per episode of filming. So I guess that speaks to the production values that we can expect to see out of that. The other main thing that is a little bit more international in nature, but is going to be available to us, one form or another, with a bit of luck, is that the Star Wars Visions series that's coming to Disney Plus this year. We don't have a date for it yet, but we have just learned that there's going to be a sneak preview shown at a virtual event coming up in July, the Anime Expo Lite event, which takes place July the 3rd to the 4th. And there's going to be a 30-minute preview of this series shown at a point in time that corresponds to 10 a.m. on Sunday, July the 4th, New Zealand time. Star Wars Visions will be screening on Disney Plus, as I said. It's described as being 10 fantastic visions from several of the leading Japanese anime studios, offering a fresh and diverse cultural perspective to Star Wars. So this will be one of the next new sources of materials, one of the new series coming to Disney Plus, and we don't know a lot about it, but I'm kind of interested about it on that basis.
Yes, I like seeing the different animation styles that Star Wars has sort of utilized over the course of the saga. We have like the micro series, the old original droid and Ewoks, and through to sort of modern takes with Resistance and Clone Wars utilizing very different styles. But of course, anime is a very popular genre, so it'll be really interesting to see how they take that and put their unique spin on Star Wars.
Yeah, you can have quite a big conversation, I think, about the using different styles of animation to tell stories in a slightly different way. The earlier Clone Wars micro series was very simplistic, but that didn't detract from the quality of the storytelling or the overall appeal in any way or shape or form. You know, in fact, and some people consider it added to it. It's just another way of painting a picture, another way of telling a story. So we're going to see 10 different interpretations of Star Wars animated storytelling from this Visions series coming to Disney Plus later this year.
We don't know if each of these 10 visions is going to be like the new Pixar shorts that have been rolling out on Disney Plus, where they kind of let the Pixar animators free reign to tell unique stories with their own specific style, which isn't necessarily typical Pixar or Disney style animation. So I'm quite enjoying those. Well, these could be like half an hour long, or like more of a sort of a mini series length episodes, like, well, sort of that 30 to 40 minute. Like, we don't really know.
We don't know what the duration is going to be, but this preview is described as being of 30 minutes duration. So if there's only 10 episodes, I don't think they can't be micro episodes. They can't be shorts. They must be, you know, fairly substantial. The other thing that we've talked about briefly in the past, but it's worth just re-mentioning, is that there is already announced a tie-in novel to this Visions series. The tie-in novel is entitled Ronin by Emma Maiko-Kandon, and that's coming out 5th of October. It can be pre-ordered now from vendors such as Mighty Ape.
So at this point, we don't know if this 30-minute preview will be available outside of the virtual event. The virtual event is purely online, much like the DC Fandome, except for this, there is a US $5 sort of online fee, which will be completely donated to charity. So if you are super, super eager to watch this.
As soon as it's available, yeah.
As soon as it's available and you want to make sure that you can see it, it's only US $5. They say on the website that while it's based in the US, they do accept international forms of payment so that anybody around the world can attend the virtual event. But I'm hoping that this won't be a convention sort of exclusive. Like sometimes when
they'll just premiere it, but yeah, it'll hopefully be available.
But then
by
it
other
screens
channels.
Other places. We know that sometimes some of the stuff that tends to be very exclusive tends to be contained within the Disney shareholder meetings. We do tend to see sort of, we hear just written descriptions.
Black out the live stream.
Yeah. And we hear maybe a little bit of sneak peek written descriptions of what was in the footage by somebody that happens to be a shareholder, and they kind of, you know, they don't want to break any rules and show the footage, but they'll give you some vague descriptions about it and things like that. So I'm really hoping that this is just a first look preview, and then it will be online, maybe even on Disney Plus, in some form, maybe, or like a long form trailer somewhere online afterwards. Because yeah, I'm really intrigued.
It's going to give us a lot of information, because at this point we know very little. So by the time we see this preview, and we'll talk about it closer to the time and after the fact, we'll have a pretty solid understanding of what to expect from Star Wars Visions on Disney Plus. So Tauranga Armageddon took place over the past weekend, the 12th to the 13th of June, at the Bay Park venue in, well, just out of Tauranga. And this was actually the first time we've been down to the Tauranga event, to be honest. Things just haven't quite fallen in place for us to be able to get down in the past, but we thoroughly enjoyed it. It's a much smaller venue, as you can imagine, but that has its positives, as well as the obvious negatives of scale. The positives being just, you know, the crowds and the ability to move around. It makes it, in many ways, it makes it quite costume friendly. It's a good venue to, and a good event to wear costumes at. And it is actually a very nice venue. There's nice spaces. You have no trouble finding space to take a break, to sit down. There's easy access, great car parking. But the main thing we want to talk about today, beyond that sort of brief overview, are the Star Wars guests that we went out of our way to catch the virtual panels of. Starting off with Kerry Walgren, who we talked about last week as having an extensive filmography and gamography within the Star Wars universe. We initially understood that she was going to be doing a virtual panel signing only, but in fact she did do a virtual autograph signing only, but in fact she did do a full virtual panel in conjunction with another voice actor, but there was a good opportunity to hear her stories and see her speak live.
Yeah, as we've mentioned before, she has a sort of a leading role character in Star Wars The Old Republic, voicing the female Jedi Knight playable character, as well as many other Star Wars video games, and even a character or two in some of the animated series like The Clone Wars. So her panel was more generically on her experience as a voice actor. Obviously, things have changed with the pandemic, so they touched on recording at home and doing things like that. She talked about creating for animated series versus video games and things like that, and sort of seeing, you know, how long in advance they record the audio, and then finding out what the whole thing looks like when it finally releases, that they often don't get any visuals or much to go on. They're just given sort of voice dialogue direction. So that was kind of fun. I always enjoy hearing from the voice actors, especially if they have had roles in Star Wars content.
Yeah, so we're familiar with her because of her Star Wars work. She didn't talk, or people didn't ask questions specifically pertaining to Star Wars. But that's fine. I find sometimes just establishing that connection of sorts with whose work you're familiar with is just a fun connection to make, and something you definitely remember moving forwards. The other two main guests are both from The Mandalorian, and we were super keen in advance to see both of these guests appear virtually, and we were not disappointed. Emily Swallow was billed both for her role in Supernatural and also The Mandalorian, of course. She plays the armorer. But the topic of The Mandalorian dominated her panel quite strongly, I think. And the things that really struck me, that I found particularly interesting about her presentation and her conversations, was that she actually seemed quite engaged with the lore. She had quite an understanding of what it meant to be the armorer, at this point, now that she's worked in the role, she didn't have a lot of familiarity with, you know, the concepts and the notions prior, but she really seems to have embraced it at this point. So it was interesting to hear her talk about, she'd been gifted a Mandalorian helmet that she has in her collection. She enjoyed talking about that. I think she said she had her dog. She's got a Mandalorian costume for her dog.
Yes, that was a fan helmet that she was gifted. Somebody asked her whether she was allowed to keep anything from the set, and she said no, that sadly she wasn't, but that she does have a helmet of the armorer that a fan made and gifted to her at a convention. So she thought that that was quite cool to sort of have that.
So she's clearly a person that embraces the role she plays to that extent. And one thing, there was a family of younger Star Wars customers who are clearly very keen Mandalorian fans. One of the questions that the younger kids put to her was about fan theories about who is the armorer and so forth. You know, there's a fan theory going out there that the Mandalorian is actually Rook Cast from the Clone Wars, previous Clone Wars episodes. Rook Cast was a female Mandalorian warrior who led the Shadow Collective, that's Maul's criminal organization. And I don't want to dwell on the fan theory per se, but when the question was presented to her, I think her response was something along the lines of, you know, could be, or that would be interesting, or so forth. She had a bit of a familiarity with what that meant. And that just really struck me as interesting.
Yeah. I also enjoyed her stories about the actual physicality of performing as the armorer. She spoke about how she moves very slowly and was sort of purpose. And that was part for the character, that she felt like, you know, she's sort of like a leader. She's very thoughtful and considered in this kind of quiet movements. But she also spoke about how the fact that the armor was just clunky to move around in, and that some of the other Mandalorians would knock into each other or fall over if they weren't careful because of their restrictive movement and restrictive vision, because it was quite a dark set as well, as the fact that everyone was wearing helmets in those scenes, because they can't take the helmets off.
To move to your cue, to you know, on based on faith, just knowing that where it was, but vaguely in terms of space, and hoping that the people who weren't supposed to be in front of you wouldn't be in front of you.
Yeah, and someone also asked her the question about whether, like, how sort of fun it was that she's the one that basically spawns the "this is the way" quote that's kind of become such a huge sort of part of, like, the merchandising and the kind of the lore about the Mandalorian and things like that. And it's her character that gets to, because that gets to sort of own that phrase.
She was
that's
the
now
first to utter it in the series, and yeah, she, that did seem to strike her as being quite significant. That came from one of her very early lines.
And of course, she didn't give us any clues about whether we will see her in season 3, but she said, you know, that would be fun. And of course, the fans would love to see her, but obviously she's being a very good employee and not giving away any hints. No clues. She wasn't sly about it. She was just like,
I think she might have said something along the lines of she'd like to believe the armorer's out there. And somebody made a comment about, a bunch of stormtroopers wouldn't be able to stand up to her and so forth. So yeah, so whether or not that implies she knows something, or just hopes something, or wishes something, or has her own fan theory, for want of a better phrase, that the armor is still out there. But yeah.
Because that would be, like, just as an aside, I do like diving into those sort of theories, because obviously the clan that keeps the helmet on has been predominantly wiped out, and of course Din Djarin is now discovering lots of other Mandalorian clans that don't subscribe to the same sort of beliefs. So it would be really interesting to see what would happen if he came up against her again, because obviously he has now removed his helmet a few times and met other Mandalorians that take their helmets off, and how that would sort of work as a dynamic. I think that would be really interesting, but conversations for another day.
And the other Star Wars guest whose virtual panel we were very keen to catch was Giancarlo Esposito. A very cool dude with a very long, extensive acting history, some very significant roles going way back to the 80s. But of course plays a very pivotal, powerful character in Star Wars The Mandalorian. And as soon as the ball got rolling on the topic of The Mandalorian, he did talk about how he approached the role, how he did research about, he almost described how, doing research into the structure of the Empire and the role of Moffs in the Empire and what that meant, and by extension he put his spin on what type of Moff he would be.
Yeah, because he was asked the question about how much information or backstory about the character was he given prior to filming, and he says they give them very little, so that he kind of did his own research into sort of...
He's a very serious actor. He takes his roles very seriously and beds them down really solidly in terms of background information and character development by the sound of things, and that was the case for even this fantastical world of Star Wars, which is cool to hear.
That
actors of that stature can take it seriously to that level. And one of the audience members had the forethought to put forward a very interesting question to him, because some of his biggest scenes in season one took place in episode 8, the TIE fighter scenes in particular, which was directed by Kiwi Taika Waititi. And so someone asked, what was it like working with Taika? And his response, I thought, was very interesting. He described Taika's approach has been quite avant-garde, so, you know, different, a little bit unusual in some ways. But he did describe him being very, very precise, right down to things like foot placement and when he had his stance on top of the TIE fighter and so forth, and what that implied in terms of the character and the action that he was trying to convey. So, yeah, he had good things to say about Taika, but that level of precision was really interesting to hear, because Taika comes across as quite a casual sort of guy. Wouldn't have really necessarily guessed that he would be that precise in the role of a director in that shape and form.
Yeah. I mean, that shot at the end of him standing on top of the TIE fighter was such a awesome, iconic image for them to kind of end that episode on. And I quite enjoyed him talking about the fact that he had to physically climb on top of it. But it was a real TIE fighter he had to, like, go up scaffolding to, like, stand on
it. We've seen pictures of the cockpit's real and the pylons to the wings are real. The extensions of the wings are green screened out and CG'd in. But yeah, he said he climbed to get to the top of the TIE fighter in that scene. It was a two-story scaffolding, so I'm sure he had some degree of safety rigging, but it did sound precarious because he did describe it as being just, you know, a spherical dome, a spherical hemispherical surface, which had its interesting challenges.
And of course, he, being the professional, didn't give anything away about whether he's filmed anything for season 3 or whether he knows what's going to happen or any sort of involvement there. So we'll just have to wait and see, I guess. All the actors are keeping very very tight-lipped about any possible involvement in season 3.
If they know at all, frankly, to be honest, you know, some of them, if they are going to be involved, may not have yet been involved, so they might not actually know either way. But yeah, obviously they're contractually obliged to keep quiet on that topic.
One thing I came away with from both of the Emily Swallow and Giancarlo Esposito panels is that how much they really do care, because they know the fans care about the characters and the lore. And we know that us as fans would just be over the moon to get cast in these things. So they both gave off the feel that they really do appreciate the how special these particular roles are. I mean, because an actor is an actor, they want roles, they want continuing work, and some roles will be more special or meaningful or maybe more challenging for them in different ways. But they both really gave off the vibe that they understand that these might not be the pinnacle of their acting careers, but they treat them with the respect of, like, Shakespeare or something. You know, they really do know that the fans want really good performances. They want really sort of actors that appreciate the opportunity to be involved in such a franchise as this.
So all in all, very good panels, very good convention. We've started getting some video content and photo contents up onto SWNZ and the SWNZ YouTube channel. We started the ball rolling with a video compilation of all the costumes that we were able to, Star Wars costumes we were able to track down, which was a really enjoyable aspect of it. We're big fans of costumes. We're costumers ourselves, but we always like seeing what other people do. And I really like seeing all levels of costume. I like just seeing people embracing the hobby of costuming.
I enjoyed seeing characters from The Mandalorian, of course. There were lots of Imperials and Jedi and Rebels running around. But I was also excited to see a number of booth staff actually dressing up in Star Wars costumes as well. There were a number of people manning their booths in full head-to-toe Star Wars costumes, and that was fun. And of course, there was quite a good array of Star Wars product to buy. A lot of it was handmade and unique.
Yeah, that's a good point. That was something I didn't mention at the start, but that was something that kind of stood out in some ways as being different from other Armageddon Expos, the balance of artisanal styles or artisanal product in general versus the big retailers.
Yeah, because it's a little bit more of a distance away from Auckland, where a lot of the major retailers sort of headquarter, we don't have the likes of EB Games or Mighty Ape coming in with huge big booths. So you get more of a mix of some of the smaller companies and a lot of independent fan companies. So we saw all sorts of handcrafted things. There were the standard sort of artist alley prints, which included some beautiful Star Wars work. I saw prints that included Rey, Leia, Queen Amidala, and of course the Mandalorian and Baby Yoda, Grogu. There was a lot of prints, crocheted things, and cute was kind of a theme. We had some very cool sort of teddy bear Ewoks and little Wookiees and things like that, badges and tote bags, and through to just a few sort of other plushies and lightsabers. And I was just impressed with the variety that was available there.
Yeah, it felt a little bit different from what we've seen in the past. It was a good thing.
And even Star Wars inspired candles. I thought that was really fun. Ones inspired by Hera, Kanan, and Carbonite. And lollipops. There is a company there that had Star Wars shaped lollipops, Mandalorian and Baby Yoda. And those ones sold pretty well. They were gone by the end of the convention. And I saw some people carting around with huge Baby Yoda lollipops about the size of your head that looked like they'd be pretty tasty and would last you a pretty long while. So it was fun. It was like product I didn't anticipate seeing. I like being surprised and sort of finding items that you won't necessarily find online or in a mall or something like that. So I really enjoyed it.
So check out the SWNZ YouTube channel for our first video about Star Wars costumes and costumers, and subscribe if you haven't already for notification when we get out a further video. We're going to be doing a bit more of a larger, broader highlight video by the end of the week with an accompanying post on the SWNZ website. And with Armageddon Tauranga now in the can and behind us, we can be looking forward to the Palmerston North Armageddon, the first Palmerston North Armageddon, which takes place in less than 2 months, August the 14th to 15th, a couple of months down the line.
This is the first Palmerston North Armageddon. So yep. Having our sort of first taste of a smaller regional Armageddon Expo at Tauranga, where I'm really excited to see what might be there for Palmerston North. Obviously, we'll probably still just be having virtual guests, but that works really well for these smaller regional conventions where they might not want to fly in a major guest because attendance numbers won't really support a fee like that to import guests on airfare. So it
that's
works.
A good point. It's a good opportunity to kick off something in a new region because of that lowered cost barrier. Yeah, good point. All right, moving on to talk about store reports and product announcements. I kind of lump those together because I want to talk about a bunch of products that have come to light over the last little while. Unfortunately, not all of them are actually available at the time of recording, but I'll come back to that and explain that. First on the list, some more characters from the Macquarie Concept Funko Pop line. Now, there's been a few waves of this so far, but the new wave includes Macquarie Concept Stormtrooper. This is from back when Stormtroopers had lightsabers. There seems to be two variants, one with a saber and one with a saber and shield. The one with a shield seems to be a Funko exclusive, and that's not showing up locally yet. It may do down the line, but not yet. And Macquarie Concept Snowtrooper and the Macquarie Concept version of Han Solo, which is a very early iteration of the character, who actually also has a lightsaber and a cape and a few other oddities that we don't see in the more developed version of the character. These are available for pre-orders from local Funko retailers, including Mighty Ape right now. Gone in the blink of an eye earlier today, unfortunately, but with a bit of luck they may show up again later, was a interesting 4-pack from Amazon, an Amazon exclusive. So not a local retailer, but Amazon exclusives don't always make it outside of the Amazon store to other sources. But what we saw there was a Vintage Collection Bad Batch 4-pack. This is the first time we've seen, from memory, the first time we've seen Vintage Collection figures with the Bad Batch logo. So 3.75-inch figures with the Bad Batch logo. This 4-pack included Clone Captain Rex, the Bracca version, the version from the most recent episode where he visits the planet Bracca, action figure that has actually new details and new components, so not just a repack of older Rex. And a few other characters. Clone Captain Ballast, who I don't think we've been introduced to yet in the Bad Batch. Clone Captain Grey. And an Elite Squad Trooper. The Elite Squad Trooper seems to be one of the troopers that's working with Crosshair back in the sort of Imperial zone of storytelling that we haven't really revisited, but should be coming back into the cycle on the Bad Batch shortly. So yeah, those popped up on Amazon earlier today. They sold out. Currently the website is saying temporarily sold out. So we'll put a link below anyway, just so that you can keep an eye on that and refresh that and see if that product availability changes.
International exclusives like this can be sort of like hit and miss. Like, I know Hasbro does a lot of exclusives with things like Walmart and Target, which obviously don't ship to New Zealand. So we often get them through other channels in New Zealand. But with Amazon shipping internationally, I often find that if Amazon has an exclusive, Amazon is the only one.
Yeah,
that there have been a few other instances, like they did a couple of, there was like a Greedo and
most
another
recently,
figure
Greedo and Obi-Wan.
That were released Success. At Amazon, and they shipped internationally, but yeah, they're not available for local retailers. So fingers crossed they will make more, because I think Bad Batch merch is actually quite sought after, especially if something like this sold out so quickly.
Yeah, so I assume down the line we'll see more 4-inch Bad Batch characters, but this set looked quite cool with a bunch of clone variants. In the 6-inch line, we talked about Gaming Greats figures a little bit, I think last podcast, certainly one of the most recent podcasts, and we talked about some figures we might like to see, so this one is going to please you. Yeah, you know what it is.
So, yeah. In a previous podcast, I talked about how we have seen KOTOR, Knights of the Old Republic characters showing up in the Gaming Greats line, like Darth Revan and Bastiller and some of the other characters from KOTOR in the Funko line. And I was hoping to see just more characters and more merchandise in general from some of the other characters from Knights of the Old Republic. And I threw into the mix that it would be fun to see some of the sort of the companion characters that you have in the game, including Mission Veo and her Wookiee friend Zalbar. And lo and behold,
without any warning, just popped up today, Zalbar the Wookiee has joined the Gaming Greats 6-inch Black Series line. So these are a exclusive to GameStop in the US. EB Games locally in New Zealand is going to carry them. This, I think, is the second Gaming Great character to bear the Knights of the Old Republic logo, following on from Darth Nihilus. Now, we know Revan has a role in the Knights of the Old Republic, but the first version of Darth Revan in the 6-inch line came out before the Gaming Greats line, so there isn't a Knights of the Old Republic logo on it, and the Jedi version of Revan has a Galaxy of Heroes logo on it. So it's interesting. I think we're stuck at currently only 2 Knights of the Old Republic Gaming Greats action figures, so yeah, keep your fingers crossed for more of those Knights of the Old Republic. Hey, but so Zalbar, you say, is a companion to the playable characters.
Yes.
It's a companion, yeah.
If you're not familiar with the game, you play as a customized character, male or female, and throughout the course of the story, you meet several other characters along the way that join you. And throughout the game, you can have sort of 2 or 3, depending on the storyline, companions with you. So you can pick and choose from your sort of collection of characters the ones that you want to take with you to do certain storyline. And Mission Veo is a blue Twi'lek that you meet in sort of the underground of Taris, and Zalbar is her Wookiee companion. So the two have kind of teamed up in the underground and they join you. So you can play with them and you can sort of control their fighting actions in the course of the game, because it's sort of turn-based. So you can control the way that they fight beside you.
So in terms of an action figure, it's a very cool sculpt, very finely detailed Wookiee fur. The character wears a bit of a harness, so I guess akin to Chewbacca's bandolier, and his weapon is a sword.
Yes, this makes him quite unique and different to other Wookiee figures that we may have seen. Most of the Episode 3 Wookiees tend to carry sort of a bowcaster of some sort or big wooden shields. We don't really see them carry sort of bladed weapons like this. And he is kind of unique in amongst your characters, and the fact that you do actually go to Kashyyyk and have a quite a significant part of the storyline with Zalbar and the other Wookiees on the planet. So you sort of get like a good sort of in-depth bit in their culture and the way that they sort of interact with each other and things with like Wookiees being used as slaves and things like that. So he feels a little bit more significant than some of the other characters.
To the story, yeah.
Yes, yes. That's a good way of putting it. Yeah. So I'm quite excited, but he is quite a pair with Mission Veo. So I'm really crossing my fingers that she isn't too far off in the line.
Yeah, well, Twi'leks are popular characters, and I'm sure Hasbro knows that that's, you know, a good potential seller. If they've gone with the Wookiee first, there's a good chance they'll go with the Twi'lek second. And the last thing I want to mention in today's store reports is another one that's in some ways a sold-out listing, but still want to discuss it. The latest coin, silver coin from the New Zealand Mint, is a Ben Kenobi Chibi silver coin. And this is interesting because it came in two packaging variants. For some reason, halfway through the run, they've decided to introduce a second type of packaging. Almost a little bit of a shame for those of you who bought earlier versions of the Chibi coins. So what we're talking about here is the standard boxed version of the coin, and then a second, slightly more expensive version where the box is encased in an additional Perspex acrylic case with a little bit of a stand where the number can be visible from the outside, so a bit of a premium display case. So they're sold out. Both are sold out locally, but as we've mentioned in the past when we were talking about New Zealand Mint, if you're really after these because they're a gap in your set or it's a character you're after, go to Sideshow Collectibles, and they often have these in stock for quite a bit longer. And in fact, this Ben Kenobi, Obi-Wan Kenobi silver Chibi coin is available at the time of recording from Sideshow Collectibles, but only the standard version of the box, not this new premium version of the box.
While buying directly from NZ Mint, you won't pay additional tax or shipping. Purchasing from Sideshow Collectibles means that the item ships from the US. You will be charged additional sort of international tax because Sideshow collects that for orders shipped to New Zealand, and you will pay international postage. But like you say, it's a good emergency backup if you missed the very quick release from the super popular Chibi line.
Yeah, so Ben Kenobi didn't sell out blisteringly fast, but it certainly was, you know, fast enough for a lot of people to miss out if you weren't completely on the ball. They are hard to get. You need to chase them actively. And those of you who collect any of the New Zealand coins will already know that. Okay, moving on to talk about last week's episode of The Bad Batch, episode 7, entitled Battle Scars. A good episode in terms of tying up loose ends, things that were talked about in previous podcasts as being a bit mysterious, but I think a number of loose ends were tied up. So what we see in this episode, Sid tells the Bad Batch that they need to do a big job because they are owing quite a bit of debt to her for a number of different reasons, including overspending on junk food, but that's another story. But during that conversation, there's a bit of a kerfuffle of sorts in the cantina, and it turns out that Captain Rex has shown up, had a bit of an encounter with some locals, but reveals himself. So it was in fact Captain Rex that Trace and Rafa communicated with in the previous episode. And they got in touch with him because he is looking for clones to join the rebellion, basically. But what transpires from that point is that he voices his concerns when he learns that they still have, that the Bad Batch still have their inhibitor chips in place, and comes up with a plan to help them surgically remove those inhibitor chips. It doesn't go fully according to plan. There's a bit of a cat and mouse game on a planet called Bracca where they are using the medical facilities on a junked Republic Venator class cruiser, but of course, as expected, managed to extract the chips from all the different clones, so they are now free from that threat. So we wrapped up the story arcs pertaining to Wrecker's headaches and the fear that he was going to have problems with his inhibitor chip. That is in fact what transpired, but they didn't labor that point. They wrapped it up tightly, and we also know that the person who was communicated with mysteriously was in fact Captain Rex.
I honestly wasn't sure if they were going to sort of resolve that, sort of, because it was quite a tease in the previous episode. And I was almost kind of surprised that almost straight away we are finding out who it was that was being messaged. So I know that there's like a week between the episodes, but I was almost thinking that they that it might
it was
take a little bit to sort of...
It was refreshing not to be strung along too long, frankly.
Yeah. I agree.
Episodes and story arcs that play the game of stringing you along can become a little bit tedious. Sure, we like a little bit of mystery, but it was nice to wrap up some loose ends.
Yeah, and it was really fun to see Rex again and seeing a very popular and central clone character from the Clone Wars, sort of connecting with the Bad Batch. It sort of really sort of brought in that history. And honestly, it makes me want to go back and watch more of the Clone Wars just to kind of get more of the Rex character. Obviously, he is so central.
Yeah, well, as a start, I absolutely want to go back and rewatch season 7 of the Clone Wars. Now that we watched it when it, you know, a little while back prior to the Bad Batch's release, but now that we've got this real connection with the Bad Batch characters, I want to go back and revisit their early episodes, frankly.
There were some sort of poignant moments where it feels like he references things from season 7. We find he talks about what happened when his inhibitor chip, kind of the process of getting it out and the problems that it caused him, and sort of hearing his perspective of, you know, he hates the chips because of what he saw them sort of affecting in the clones. He talks about he doesn't want to bury any more of his clone brothers, and you kind of really get the feel that the galaxy's got to be a drastically different place for Rex. And there are some moments where he just kind of poignantly is holding his helmet, just kind of looking at it. No sort of dialogue, it's just sort of that sort of really sort of reflection. And I quite like those sort of little quiet moments. They're quite artistic, and they just sort of, they instantly make you think back to all the stories and all the moments that we have seen in the Clone Wars and that the Clone Troopers go through. And obviously we know where Rex ends up more towards, because he appears in Rebels. But I liked this because this feels much closer to Order 66. And that is a topic that they do talk about. That I thought it was interesting that while they're trying to remove the inhibitor chip from Wrecker first, because his seems to be the one that's giving everyone the most issues, they're about to sort of get him on the medical table to begin the process. And they were talking about what the chips were doing to the clones. And the very last sentence that is spoken was talking about how we couldn't save the Jedi, but we helped the Padawan escape. And it almost feels like this is what snaps Wrecker, because he realizes that these clones around him disobeyed Order 66 and purposefully helped a Jedi escape. And it kind of feels like, bam, that's what it is. And then he goes sort of on a very aggressive spree where he's trying to either arrest or execute the clones and even Omega, because she is siding with the other clones. So in his sort of corrupted, altered state from the inhibitor chip, he does try to attack Omega. And it's, you know that nothing, it's not really hugely imperiled. You know that he's not going to kill her. That would be a kind of a brutal turn for the show. But it was an interesting dynamic, because even after all of that, and she sees what he is capable of, when he's finally on the table getting his inhibitor chip taken out, she won't leave his side.
And of course, they ultimately make amends and have an understanding of why things happened without taking it personally, which of course is a tidy conclusion.
Because like you referenced, the debt from junk food, after each mission, Wrecker and Omega share Mantel mix, which looks like sort of fruity popcorn. It almost reminds me of the popcorn that you can buy in Galaxy's Edge. It almost makes me think they're referencing that. But it's cute that they have this kind of big brother, little sister relationship where they kind of indulge in some sort of candy treats after each mission. And right at the end of this episode, when he's feeling low because he realizes what he did, she pulls out some of this food from her pocket and said, the mission's over, we can't break tradition. So it was a neat sort of little, like, yes, it was, you know, an awful situation, but it hasn't broken the bond that Omega has with her Bad Batch brothers.
Yeah, the other thing that I wanted to talk about, just to jump topics a little bit, you mentioned the moments of artistic style, and we talked when we saw this and soon after it, that the level of detail that's showing up in this series in general. The planet Bracca is a starship junkyard. It's a planet that has been referenced before. It first showed up in one of the novels, Resistance Reborn, and it's also the planet that features at the start of the Jedi Fallen Order video game. So it is a planet just covered or filled, or at least the landscape that we see, of wrecked starships. But that just gives room for just immense level of detail, starship wreckage. There's water, moving water, that is incredibly well rendered. And it really just shows how much has been put into these productions, as well as the storytelling, the actual, you know, effort into the digital rendering and so forth. And I've heard online people from production talking about the level of complexity, for instance, in the salvage yards where they were first chasing the tactical droid head. Because when you stop and just think about it for a moment, there is so much going on from one edge of the screen to the other edge of the screen in terms of detail and lighting and visual complexity. And this was another example of that. And really speaks to how far Star Wars, The Clone Wars and Bad Batch as an extension has come.
In Disney Plus, when you're looking at the sort of the Star Wars section, you can see underneath Clone Wars Season 7 that they sort of advertise it with movie-level sort of quality animation.
That's one of the marketing statements, yeah.
Yeah, and I really feel like The Bad Batch is sort of continuing that legacy. There were moments where I was just like really struck by the detail and just the sort of artistry of not just the clones, but the background and all the detail. And it's sort of, it's really feeling like maybe they are bringing in Pixar people or something like that, because, you know, Disney, but it just sort of feels like they're like, okay, we kind of, Disney has this immense legacy in animation. You know, they're one of the world leaders in animation. Historically, and in the modern era, Pixar and Disney movies really dominated the box office a lot of the time. And it feels like Disney's like, okay, we have something to prove. We are known for animation. Let's show them animation. You know, like, I feel like whatever sort of, you know, whatever you think of Resistance, the animation style was a choice. But I feel like after we'd had The Clone Wars, it just didn't quite resonate with people, because we know what Lucasfilm can give us. And I think they're like, okay, we get it. You want the detailed stuff. And they're giving us the really detailed stuff. And it was just beautiful to watch.
I think it's an interesting thing, because I think it might speak to the, not, we're talking about computer generated animation here, but I think it actually might speak to other film production styles as well. Because The Mandalorian Season 1, amazing detail, blew everyone's minds in many ways, what they were able to do effectively on a stage. But that was novel technology at that point, the whole use of the volume and the digital real-time rendered backgrounds using gaming technology. That was new technology. And as that matures, I think we're going to see really cool, new, interesting tricks pulled out of the bag. So obviously the computer animated, it's the CG animated series are evolving and maturing, but I think just the technology that they're, because they're making stuff continuously, Star Wars material continuously, I think we're going to see this maturation of production values across the board.
Yeah, like it just sort of spoke to me that this isn't just like a little, let's slap something on the back end of the Clone Wars because that was popular and let's give the fans a little bit more and eke this out. It really does feel like a really thoughtful, considered show in both the writing and the animation.
Yeah.
And I'm really enjoying the voice work.
Good effort and commitment all around.
Yeah. Yeah, Dee Bradley Baker is really honing in on the subtleties of each different character.
He doesn't have a New Zealand accent. We know that, but he is putting his spin on the accent, and he's developed it adequately for each of the different characters.
In a recent interview, he spoke about how he really does see each of the Bad Batch as different characters with subtly different voices. And when you really listen, you can hear the differences, which I think is neat. It's got to be hard. I mean, guest starring Rex is yet another clone voice that's subtly different to the rest of the Bad Batch. So, I mean, he's doing like four or five different subtly, they've all got to sound like the same person, but they're not at different times. That's got to be quite some sort of vocal technique that's really showing how skilled he is at his craft.
So that episode, as we say, wrapped up a number of loose ends. It did leave us on a little bit of a loose end, because the closing scenes were of Hunter being spotted by the members of the Scrapper Guild on their floating platforms, and they communicated with the Empire basically to let them know the current location of the Bad Batch. That's going to play into whatever we see this coming week. We look forward to seeing that develop, as always. So tied up loose ends, left us on a little bit of a new loose end, but not a complicated one, an expected one, I think it's fair to say.
I'm curious to see if we will see Rex or any other clones jumping towards the end.
They left that open as well. They talked about, if you need us, you know how to get in touch with us. You don't usually say that sort of thing if you don't mean it.
Yeah.
In terms of storytelling.
Yeah. We saw Rex talking to somebody on a comm link at the end, but we don't know who he was talking with as well. So yeah, we don't know, like, obviously he was looking for clones, but we don't, like, he just wants them to sort of join the fight. So we don't know if that's going to become a larger part of the story, that we're seeing a few more sort of clone troopers running, crossing paths and all coming together with sort of, you know, a rebellion against the Empire, or whether the Bad Batch has got a much more personal fight against the Empire that they're going to do by themselves.
Yeah, they talked about their own sort of internal uncertainty and finding out where their what their role in the galaxy, where it's going to land, yet to be fully developed and discovered.
I got the feeling that when Wrecker is talking about that he needed to do the best for his squad, that he's including Omega in that. That he sees her as part of their squad, and that any decision that they make has to take her well-being and her into account. So it'll be interesting to see whether we are going to head more towards sort of a grand.
Her role has got to be something more than just a tag along.
Without a doubt. But there's going to be something personal. I mean, there's a lot of mysteries about her, and I feel like they're going to have to show us a little bit more about why she is so important. Obviously, she is unique, but I feel like she has a important role in the larger scheme of things. Particularly, I don't think we've seen the last of bounty hunters trying to track her down. I think we're going to see something else. But yeah.
Yeah, so another good episode, episode 7, Battle Scars. And we're looking forward to the next episode, episode 8, Friday evening, 7 p.m. New Zealand time. We'll talk about that in a week's time in the next podcast. But on that note, that's about it for this installment. I guess we are done doing talking. Thank you once again for tuning in. We appreciate you taking your time to listen to us share our passion for Star Wars. Stay tuned to the website swnz.co.nz for Star Wars news for New Zealanders, including some more Armageddon coverage, as I mentioned, and another podcast episode every week on Fridays. You can catch our podcasts wherever you subscribe to your favorite casts. Don't forget, you can also jump on over to either our Facebook group or the SWNZ message boards to discuss all the latest Star Wars news with other Kiwi fans. Thank you for listening.
And may the Force be with you.